D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. The NFL offseason is here for the Tennessee Titans. Their season ended yesterday in a blowout loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars, 41-7. Cam Ward suffered a shoulder injury. It was initially reported as a grade 3 AC joint sprain. It appears that the worst case scenario has been avoided. Surgery, I don't think, has been officially ruled out, but it doesn't appear that's going to be the case. But we'll see. But now that the offseason is here, of course, the number one story with the Tennessee Titans is who is going to be the Tennessee Titans' next head coach. And I would love to meet someone who has ever placed a bet on who the next coach of a team is going to be. But DraftKings Sportsbook does have odds for the next Titans coach. And the clear favorite is Matt Nagy. Matt Nagy at plus 300, followed by Robert Saleh and Mike McCarthy at plus 650, Arthur Smith at plus 700, Chris Shula at plus 750, Mike Kafka, Clint Kubiak, and Jeff Hafley at plus 1,000. So the leader in the clubhouse, according to the odds makers, is Chiefs offensive coordinator, former Bears head coach, Matt Nagy. And as we learned last week, guys, Mike Borgonzi is going to be leading the coaching search. He has been given that power by Amy Adams Strunk. So it got me wondering if we should move certain candidates up the list. And let's start with Matt Nagy. Again, the betting favorite to be the Titans' next head coach was the Bears' head coach for 4 years, if I recall correctly. Had a winning record in Chicago, but has been the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs most recently. And there was a story written by Dan Pompey of The Athletic. I believe it published last week. A really great story about Matt Nagy and what he would do differently if given a second chance to be a head coach in the NFL. And there's a passage in that story. It's a long story, but there is a passage in that story that a lot of Titans fans have copied and pasted. And it was this, quote, "Nagy tries to develop young assistant coaches on the staff, sharing mistakes he made in conducting mock job interviews. He has helped Chiefs executives too. When then assistant GM Mike Borgonzi prepared to become a general manager, he and Nagy talked through scenarios and bounced ideas off one another. Borgonzi became general manager of the Titans in 2025. So with the connection to Borgonzi, Derek, and the fact that Borgonzi is leading the coaching search, it has led to many Titans fans feeling that Matt Nagy's hiring is inevitable. So let's work off of that premise. How would you feel if Matt Nagy was hired as Tennessee Titans head coach?
Listen, he was a former coach of the year. What was it, 2018-19, somewhere around
2018.
That. 2018, coach of the year. So he understands and he knows how to coach a team. Now, everything went sort of left for him. He went back to Kansas City and resumed a role as offensive coordinator, but wasn't calling plays. I think that relationship between he and Borgonzi is one that is he probably more than likely the front runner right now? Yeah, but there may be someone that sort of, you know, comes up and really surprised Borgonzi. I think the relationship will be the tipping point. They both sort of speak the same language. Why? Because they've been in the same organization together. They know what a winning organization looks like, how to form one from the ground up, basically because they got Pat when he was young as a rookie, and they were able to develop him in that team. So they both sort of speak the same language, and they know how to build together. So if they decide to make him the head coach, then to me, I think the pressure would really be on for them to rectify this ASAP, because there's no, well, they're trying to get used to one another and this. No, they know each other. They know the vision. They both probably have the same vision. So if this thing doesn't start off the way that the fans think it should start off, then you're going to have a problem. But I don't see why he shouldn't be, leading the leading candidate right now.
Willie, I've seen differing opinions on Matt Nagy. Matt Nagy, 4 years as the head coach of the Chicago Bears, as Derek mentioned, 2018 Coach of the Year, his first season in Chicago. The Bears went 12-4 and made the playoffs. He made 2 playoff appearances in 4 seasons, did not win either playoff game. But here are the differing opinions. Number one, he had a winning record as Bears coach despite having Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields as his quarterbacks. That's opinion number one. The second opinion, Matt Nagy botched the development of Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields. So I've seen differing opinions on this. As Teron Davenport mentioned earlier, he's been working, Matt Nagy that is, has been working with Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. We heard plenty of comparisons between Cam Ward and Patrick Mahomes in the draft process last offseason. So I'm curious which is truer, that he made the best of a bad situation or if he didn't help two young quarterbacks develop.
Well, I would answer the second part by saying, what has Mitch Trubisky done since he's been in Chicago? I think his best year clearly was that year in Chicago that you just referenced, 12-4. He hasn't done anything close to that since. So is that all? It's not just Nagy that had to do with his development. He's been, what, 5 other teams since then, Trubisky? And the same is true of Fields. He's been well-traveled, and he's about the same guy that he's been. It hasn't happened for him either. So I would discount that. I'm not worried about that. I'm focused more about the match of his offensive philosophy with the skill set of Cam Ward. Like, Matt Nagy was an arena football quarterback where you make those quick decisions, right? And that, I think sometimes if you look, that's a really interesting way to train yourself as a play caller. Another guy that had a similar background is in Green Bay right now, Matt LaFleur. He was an arena football quarterback. There's something about how you process things quick in that league that I think helps you be an offensive play caller. At least that's just my theory. But what is the Kansas City play calling? It's Andy Reid. Andy Reid is from the ancient Bill Walsh, Mike Holmgren, West Coast style, right? It's evolved over the years. And D-Mace, this is where I'm going to lean on you. But as we move forward, like Nagy comes back to the Chiefs, he's got an older Patrick Mahomes. It's an aging roster. They haven't really run the ball that much. And I wonder, when we make these comparisons between Ward and Mahomes, mm-hmm. like, what's the right offense to run? Because Teron pointed out that when Ward started playing better, he had a really good support from Tony Pollard. He started running the ball better. The offensive line was doing a really good job run blocking, and I think the passing numbers got steadily better as a result. So what offense do you want to run? And can Nagy have the right mix with Cam Ward?
I think it can happen, because I think with any offense, and they run this West Coast Andy Reid type offense, but I think with any offense, you have to have the ability to run the football. I think Kansas City, at their best, they were able to run the football very effectively, and that propelled them into winning Super Bowls, being in the playoffs X amount of years, being in an AFC Championship game consistently X amount of years. It was because they had that balance. You knew Pat was going to be Pat. You knew he was going to do what he needed to do, but they needed that balance. When they didn't have that balance, that's when things became hard, and guys started getting older, and guys started getting injured. I'm not saying that, and I understand what TD's saying, and that's why he likes sort of an Arthur Smith type, because Cam did seem to work a lot better out of underneath the center, play action, stuff like that. It seemed he worked better the second half in that than he did in the Callahan type of offense, trying to push the ball down the field, all this quick passing. But I think if you say Nagy is your guy, I think you still would have the ability to run the football, but that has to be your primary. That you have to go in thinking that, like, we have to run the football. And Kansas City was at its best when they were able to run the football effectively. And then the quarterback was able to, you know, do some of these, you know, sleight of hands with the football, jet sweeps, running jet sweeps to get the linebacker's eyes to move. And now I hit those guys 10, 12, 15 yards down the field, crossers, middle of the field. They can still do that in a Nagy West Coast or a Reed West Coast type offense, but they got to be committed to it.
The Ringer has...
Real quick, a follow-up, Derek. How different is a sort of a... We think it's a derivative of the West Coast offense, right? How different is that from the offense they just got done running this year? Because we always are concerned when a quarterback has to change the terminology and somewhat the philosophy.
I'm not sure, at least the second half of the season. I think Cam was underneath center more. I'm not sure how much underneath center Patrick Mahomes was.
They run a lot of shotgun.
Exactly. So can you try to mirror more so of how can we do this if indeed Nagy's going to be your guy and this is the offense that he want to run? Well, we've seen this is sort of because he ran it in pitch, in Chicago. How can we get Cam underneath center? Because we've seen what he can do underneath center. We've seen the play action. And if we want to hire Nagy, it's how do you conform to your player? It's not, you know, taking your plan. No, you got to do what we say. No, how do we conform this offense to this player so he can be at his best when we step out there on Sundays or Mondays?
What's interesting, Adam, is the first go-round, remember, Nagy had two stints as the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs on either side of him getting the Bears job. The first go-round, it was the last 2 years of Alex Smith being the starter. It was pre-Mahomes. And they had some really good teams that I think would be considered overachievers, right? Those couple of years. And then he had the aging Patrick Mahomes the last 2 years when he came back. And, of course, this last year, the wheels kind of fell off. Nobody could stay on the field. So I think that's interesting, right? So it's not like he just was riding the coattails of Patrick Mahomes to get the Bears job in the first place. I think that's noteworthy.
The Ringer has an excellent head coaching candidate guide that I am leaning on in this process because, again, I don't know any of these. I mean, I know of a lot of these guys. I've heard their names. I've seen them coach their respective teams, but I can't tell you their philosophies or anything like that. So this guide from The Ringer has been really helpful. And in the section about Nagy, by the way, the authors of this guide, not fans of Matt Nagy, here is part of what they wrote. Quote, having coached under Andy Reid for the bulk of his career, Nagy has only two full seasons of play calling experience, and neither was successful. The Bears finished outside the top 20 in total offense in both 2018 and 2019. He gave up play calling in his third season in Chicago and hasn't returned to it since. If Nagy is more of an ideas man, then the current state of the Chiefs' offense, which is based on stale concepts that were seen as innovative at the beginning of the decade, could hold him back this hiring cycle. The fact that he's viewed as a viable candidate at all shows how shallow the pool seems to be this offseason.
But that's why I say it's not because, listen, if you look at Sean Payton is able to work. Why? Because he saw his quarterback and said, what can he do best? Let's do that stuff within the offense. Let's tailor our offense. Because this ain't the offense Drew Brees was running. Drew Brees wasn't running around, you know, bootlegging and all this other stuff. No. But he has conformed to his quarterback, and it's working. If Nagy seriously wants this job, and Borgonzi, they want to be successful, then maybe that style of offense wholeheartedly can't work with Cam. You need to be able to adjust, transform, you know, update yourself, run things that you can still do some of the things that you did in Kansas City or Chicago, but let's tailor it to our quarterback. He's not Patrick. He's not Justin. He's not, you know, any other quarterback that you've coached. Let's tailor this offense to him because it seems like when Cam's underneath center, he can really go for some. his offense can move.
By the way, Willie, one texter tells us, according to Sharp Football Analysis, Kansas City ran 23% under center this season. The Titans were at 55%.
So you got to mirror. You got to find a way to mirror whatever offense you're going to bring in. If it's Matt Nagy, then okay, that offense you've been running. Tell me how you've now, you know, get innovative with it. Tell me how does it work with my quarterback, not Patrick Mahomes, how is it going to work with my quarterback? Because my quarterback has had some success being underneath center, bootleg, and all this other stuff. That's what he's successful. And so can you conform this offense, not totally throwing it out, but let's do some things that our quarterback is capable of doing at a high level, and then we'll start working that other stuff in.
There's also the terminology change.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder how easy that will be. Like, you would hope that you could teach it quick. Like that has derailed quarterbacks over the years. Young quarterbacks who have to change coordinators, change terminology, relearn an entirely new offense. I would hope it wouldn't be completely different and completely foreign.
So Dan Pompey, who wrote that story about Matt Nagy on The Athletic, which I recommend, really great story. Dan Pompey, an excellent reporter. In a follow-up question on social media, he said that Nagy, quote, told me clearly and repeatedly he will not call plays. I assume if he becomes a head coach. There was another report, I believe from Ian Rappaport and Tom Pelissero of NFL Network, that if Nagy does not get a head coaching job this cycle, he's hoping for another offensive coordinator position where he will be able to call plays. Because as Willie mentioned, Matt Nagy does not call the offensive plays in Kansas City. Andy Reid does. So it is interesting to me if I assume that Pompey means that if Nagy will not call plays if he's a head coach, then you have to wonder about, okay, who's the offensive coordinator hire going to be? Who's going to call the plays? So that's an interesting wrinkle in there as well. And I actually
Is there a young wizard on the staff for the Chiefs? And this is a dangerous game to play, because when you're coaching under Andy Reid, right, he's the wizard, but it doesn't mean that everybody that's come off of the Andy Reid tree can recreate that.
Right, like the Sean McVay tree, for example.
Right.
Just because you were in proximity to Sean McVay or Andy Reid doesn't mean that you're going to become the next Sean McVay or Andy Reid. But actually, Willie, I do have a name for you, and I will tell you that name coming up next. 615-737-1025. Matt Nagy is the betting favorite, the clear betting favorite, to be the Titans' next head coach. He, of course, has a relationship with Mike Borgonzi from their shared time in Kansas City. How would you feel about that? Because my vibe that I'm getting from all of you on our phone and text lines is that you wouldn't be thrilled about it. Now, hiring the coach is not about winning the news conference, right? Mm-hmm. Plenty of coaches who have won the news conference have ultimately been duds as actual coaches. So although Nagy, if the Titans put out a press release tomorrow saying that Matt Nagy was the next head coach, I feel like we would be getting a lot of meh from our listeners. But how would you feel if Matt Nagy, who is the betting favorite to be the next Titans head coach, actually becomes the Titans' next head coach? 615-737-1025. I will tell you that name, who could call plays for the Titans if Matt Nagy is the head coach. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, and welcome in our friend Adam from Portland. Adam, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Adam, this is my question for you, man, because I haven't really heard anybody ask it. Why do we want to be Kansas City? We don't have Patrick Mahomes. We don't have Andy Reid, but it's like, we got to go get a Kansas City coordinator. Their offense looked horrible when they didn't have Patrick Mahomes. And when everything's not lined up, their offense, like the way they built it, looks pretty terrible since Tyreek left. But especially I think when you take Travis Kelce out of that offense too, man, they may be one of the worst in the league, minus the quarterback. So why do we want to be that? I don't know. Like I just keep hearing we're putting together a Kansas City type look right here, and I want to know why.
Derek, why don't you answer that question? Thank you, Adam.
I don't listen. Whoever you go out and get, you have to. It has to be what's best for your quarterback and your franchise, whichever coach you choose to go get. Now they have a relationship, and just because you come from Kansas City doesn't mean you're going to run it like Kansas City. No, Cam Ward isn't Patrick Mahomes. He hasn't even been in the league a full, you know, two seasons. He's just finished up his rookie season, so he's nowhere near Patrick Mahomes. But what you're trying to do is you're trying to bring a guy in that you feel can lead your team and that has been a part of winning, that knows what winning looks like, that knows how to put together a winning roster. And, you know, by way of being a coordinator or a head coach, he's been a part of that. Now, listen, the last 2 years in Chicago wasn't good. And I don't know if it was him or was it the quarterbacks, because the quarterbacks went other places and it still didn't work for them. And he chose to go back to Kansas City and it worked for 1 year and it didn't last year. But they had a bunch of injuries. But that's Kansas City. Listen, I wouldn't sort of moan and groan if the Titans were to hire Nagy. If they chose not to hire him, I wouldn't be. I just want them to get the best guy for the job. The guy that can come in, if he isn't going to do it, that's going to find someone else that is going to develop their young quarterback, their young talent, because this team is only going to get good quickly is if that young talent started to develop a little bit faster than what they have been.
So, as Derek said, you're looking for a coach who can develop a young quarterback. And as we talked about before the break, Dan Pompey, who wrote a long feature story on Matt Nagy, said that Nagy told him, quote, clearly and repeatedly, he will not call plays, I assume, if he is hired as head coach. But there's another name with a connection to Mike Borgonzi that I'm wondering about, maybe not as head coach, but as offensive coordinator, and that is Mike Kafka, the interim head coach of the New York Giants, who was the assistant head coach and offensive coordinator before the Giants fired Brian Daboll. The Titans interviewed Kafka during the last coaching search before they landed on Brian Callahan. And Kafka worked for the Chiefs from 2017 to 2021 as an offensive quality control coach, a quarterback's coach, and a passing game coordinator. And I think, Willie, that Mike Kafka got some good football out of Jackson Dart. So perhaps that's a name who could be a young play caller who could help Cam Ward.
Yeah, I think these are all great theories. And I think we have to make sure that we continue to emphasize that you have to, it's hard to know what's in Mike Borgonzi's head because he knows these guys way, way better, just as people, as an everyday thing. It's easy for all we can do, right, as sports talk show people, listeners who offer information, right? That was a good phone call we just had, right? Why? It's a fair question.
Yeah.
Can anybody emulate Kansas City? I don't know if it can be done, right? It's so unique. We saw Belichick and Brady. So many Belichick assistants got jobs over the years. Nobody really was able to have a ton of success to say, yep, that's the Belichick family tree, because it's such a unique setup. But Borgonzi's knowledge of these guys should help. Are there comparisons between Jackson Dart and Cam Ward? Jackson Dart runs wild, right? We talked about all season long how he's a little reckless, and can he stay healthy? Cam Ward doesn't really play that way. He doesn't run that way. So I'm not sure what the match is, but I'm just going to say philosophically that I think it's very, very important that the transition from what Cam Ward has done well and learned this year be smooth going into next year, whatever guy you end up with. I just hope it's not a radical change where he's asked to learn something completely different.
One texter says, Amy needs to say all the way out of it. So Albert Breer, Sports Illustrated, reported that, quote, in the room for the first round of Zoom interviews will be Mike Borgonzi, Chad Brinker, assistant GM Dave Ziegler, VP/football advisor Reggie McKenzie, and Vice President of Player Personnel, Dan Sagany. Strunk will likely meet the finalists during the second round of interviews, which will take place in person. The owner is going to be involved. Now, we don't know if that means that Amy Adams Strunk will disagree with the choice that Mike Borgonzi makes, but I it's silly to suggest that the owner is not going to have some say in the matter. I do think Titans fans, however, Derek, want Strunk to be involved as minimally as possible.
I listen, this is her team. She can, you know, decide on the next head coach if she wants to. I'm not sure if that would endear to your fan base, but be endearing to your fan base. But it's your team. You can do whatever you want. I think Amy is in place now. I think because of the restructuring, sort of whatever, making Borgonzi the guy in a traditional sense as GM, I think she believes in her mind that she's done the right thing and that now she can let the people pick the coach and she is okay with it. She just want to hear why you chose the coach. Like, I'm going to listen to him the second round, and when you get to the last, I listen to it. But more than anything, because I restructured this in a way to let you know that you have full control over hiring the coach. So if that's the case, just tell me why you're hiring him. I heard some things, okay? I listened in on it. But why did you decide that you wanted to hire him? Because I'm going with it. Unless it's just an outlier and, you know, you just making a decision that everybody's against. But if you pick this guy, Borgonzi, and this is your guy, just tell me why you picked him. But I'm good with it. I think that's her position now. I don't think she's going to, you know, do what some of the fan base or majority of the fan base thinks she's going to do or want her not to do. I think she now is in a position where I hired the right people. I just want to hear why they're going to hire the head coach. Why are you going to hire this head coach, Borgonzi? Okay, all right. I trust you. Now let's get the job done. If that's not the way she's thinking, then I could be wrong. I don't know. But I would think the same way if I was her at this point now, because now you got to show me something. So you pick this coach and I'm good with it, but he better start winning, or y'all better start winning.
Zach on our text line says, at this point, I don't think I would get excited about any coach until they got out there and proved they could do it with this team. If I had to choose one guy to get excited about, I guess it would be Mike McCarthy. And Willie, as I said, look, the one goal of every new coach in that introductory news conference is to win the news conference. And there have been countless examples of coaches who have quote-unquote won the news conference who have been complete and total duds as coaches. So answering the questions the way that fans want those questions to be answered does not mean that you're going to be a good head coach. Again, my feeling is if it is Matt Nagy, there are going to be plenty of Titans fans who just sort of shrug. I'm like, ah, okay, sure, whatever. But it's not about that. It's about what the coach can do on the field. I'm not sure. I would be curious about this. 615-737-1025. If there are any coaches who are reportedly available in this cycle who would get fans excited. I can't recall exactly how people felt about Brian Callahan. I think people were excited about the fact that he coached with Joe Burrow and the Bengals had a great offense.
My recollection of it, and you guys tell me if it differs from yours, is he was considered for whatever reason, I think because of what Adam was just starting down, that impressive list of quarterbacks he had worked under.
Yes.
Right? I think that was probably his calling card. Was he'd work with this guy, this guy, this guy. These are all Hall of Famers. He's got to know something. And the Bengals had had a lot of success. And he was considered a sought-after coaching candidate that if he didn't get it with the Titans, he was probably going to get a shot with somebody. And I think he was very different than Mike Vrabel. And so it sounded like it could work. So I wouldn't say it was like a home run winning the press conference, but I think it is fair to say that it seemed like a really successful move on the day that he was hired. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I don't think you're wrong. I think he said all the right things. So
Andrew,
so you can't ever know if you've if you've got the right guy on the day of the press conference, I think is all we could say.
Andrew says, I would consider it a success if the Titans win at least 8 games next season. So with that being said, to make sure it's a sure bet, can we just go ahead and hire Jeff Fisher? Well, Jeff Fisher is available for interviews, so I guess you could do that, but I probably would advise against it. Sean says, like Derek said, go find a head coach that adapts to the players around him. I still like Arthur Smith. Every year, Arthur was adapting the offense to his personnel.
That is what you gotta, whether it's the head coach or the offensive coordinator that is hired by the head coach, you have to find a way to get the most or maximize the most out of Cam Ward while developing him, hopefully into your franchise elite quarterback or franchise quarterback. So they got to have a – I think they got to bring somebody in that is willing to adapt, that is willing to say – like Cliff Kingsbury, he adapted some of his offense to Jaden Daniels' talent, you know. And this year wasn't so good because Jaden was spent a lot, you know, in the injury room or on the injured list. But I think that's why maybe some coaches or owners choose to go with more of a younger – sort of coach, because those coaches seem to, even though they're, you know, whether it's McVay or whatnot, they're really like stark in what they're doing. They find a way to adapt to what their quarterback can do. You see what he adapted to Brock Purdy in his ability or the things that he couldn't do, you know, in that offense. And now that offense runs on all cylinders. So it's about, I got an offense, but how do I adapt it to the quarterback that I have that has talent?
And Shanahan and McVay, right, if I got this right, Mace, that's sort of the same family tree. Uh-huh. So you've already got Cam Ward understanding, I think, the base concepts of it. Everybody's gone in their own direction over the years, I'm sure. But that would be pretty different than Kingsbury, mm-hmm. who, at least from where I sit, he's had Daniels, he's had Kyler Murray, guys mm-hmm. who could really run, a lot of shotgun, a lot of wide open. I don't see a fit there.
No.
With Cam Ward?
No, but I'm just saying how those coaches are able to able to adapt while developing their quarterback and not saying, nope, we're doing it this way. Well, no, maybe we have to change it a little bit until he's able to grasp what we're trying to do. That's what I mean by adapting your system. And whoever you get, you're going to have to adapt it. If it's Nagy, he's going to have to adapt some of his system to what we've seen Cam do well.
One texter says, the only way I would be excited is if the Titans figure out some way to trade their entire draft for Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay. All the retreads are a solid meh, so give me Clint Kubiak. Clint Kubiak, the offensive coordinator with the Seattle Seahawks, who is unavailable. Well, actually, he would be available for an interview because the Seahawks are off next week. Mm-hmm. So he will be a hot name out there as well. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show by continuing to take your reaction to the Titans coaching search. Mike Borgonzi expected to address reporters tomorrow. Interested to hear what he has to say. 615-737-1025. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Darnick, 1025 The Game. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. The Commodore Hour is coming up next. And let's give a shout out to Vanderbilt basketball, both the men and the women.
I've been waiting for this. I've been waiting for you to bring this up, Adam. My goodness.
The men.
What is going on?
The men are 14-0 after defeating South Carolina 83-71 on Saturday. Tyler Tanner, 19 points, 14 assists, just one turnover against the Gamecocks. A huge game, Willie Donick, at Memorial Gym on Wednesday. Alabama coming to town. A huge game in the SEC. Meanwhile, the women, 15-0 after defeating LSU 65-61 yesterday. Michaela Blake's, as is her wont, 32 points for the Commodore. So
32 out of the 64 or 65?
A combined
65-61?
32 of 65. A combined 29-0 for the Commodore's basketball programs.
Bring it on. You know, it's noteworthy. South Carolina is not a great team, but it was a road game, and Vanderbilt was playing without Frankie Collins and Duke Miles, their leading scorer. And they led wire to wire, thanks to Tyler Tanner and, you know, everybody else kind of picking up the slack.
Nichols is a hell of a three-point shooter, man. That kid can.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. If he's on, it's hard to beat them because he gives them, and I know Tanner and those guys are great, but he gives them that threat that if you go into a zone, which we've seen teams try to play zone against Vandy, and they've been successful at times, but Vandy has been able to sort of get themselves out of it. But if he starts going, if he can stay consistent when those teams want to play those zones, man, it's going to be tough to beat Vandy.
Vanderbilt at
he's
number
got,
11.
He's got about as quick a release on a catch and shoot as I've seen. It's just if he has just a little bit of a sliver, if you're not on him as soon as he catches it, he shoots in rhythm really well. And he's about, what, 45, 46% for three. And, Adam, I know you love the math, right? And what is Alabama famous for under Nate Oates? He's a mathematician, right? He does the math and says, we need to shoot threes. So this game on Wednesday, first of all, I saw this. It's the first time two teams ranked in the top 15 have played each other in that gym since 1974. That's Jan Van Bredekhoff and the F Troop, a famous, famous team. I can't believe that in the Eddie Fogler era or anything, there was never one game, or the Kevin Stallings with those great teams, there was never two matchups at the top 15. That surprised me. But this game, each team could get 100 easily with the way they shoot and play tempo. That is going to be a wildly, wildly entertaining game. Plus, hats off to Shea Ralph. My goodness, what an incredible job she's been doing. You beat LSU. That gets everybody's attention across the country.
On my list of coaches who I like to watch lose, Kim Mulkey is probably somewhere near the top. She's probably not at the top.
But she's the classic villain, right? She's going to be the show.
Yes.
One way or the other, you love it or you root against it. But either way, it's never dull. So that's a great feather in your cap.
By the way, Alabama and Vanderbilt, second and sixth, respectively, in the KenPom offensive efficiency rating. Mm. So to Willie's point, there might be a lot of points scored at Memorial Gym on Wednesday. A huge game, the two top teams in the SEC. I'm looking, by the way, to see what the over-under for that game is. Hold on a minute. I don't see it yet. I'll see if I can find it somewhere else, but it's not immediately available.
The other thing we don't know, everybody's wondering, because everybody's kind of hush-hush, is I was surprised that Duke Miles didn't play, and so I don't know what the issue is there. I didn't hear. I was listening to the game with Kevin and Kevin Ingram, Tim Thompson. I didn't hear them say why he didn't play, if he's just banged up or something like that. We know Frankie Collins is injured for a while, but I'm hoping that Duke Miles is back in there, because that's going to be a tough game. First SEC home game of the year.
I do not see the over-under immediately available, but we will keep an eye on that. The other thing too, Willie, and I know you'll appreciate this, one of the narratives around the Vanderbilt men so far is, well, who have they played? Two teams that they defeated had big wins over the weekend. UCF
big wins.
Beat Kansas. SMU beat North Carolina. So that helps bolster Vanderbilt's schedule strength.
Yeah, I think that has been overblown, because you don't get ranked that high in the net and the KenPom if you haven't beaten anybody, right? There hasn't been that sexy win against a Michigan State or, a traditional powerhouse. But like you said, SMU, Wake Forest, Memphis, those are all solid teams. Not that they're great, but it's been a good schedule, not a great schedule. But, of course, you got to prove yourself. This is, I think, Alabama's probably the best team that they will have faced on the season coming in on Wednesday. I'm looking forward to it.
Let's go to our phone line. Tim, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Tyler Nichols, Nichols, he's only shooting threes a little better than what you did, right?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit better.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Willie and everybody, guys, I enjoy this show every day. I'm going to tell you something. These two Vanderbilt teams, there was something put out the other day talking about Mark Byington saying that he may be one of the, if not the, best coach in the country right now. Would you imagine 18 months ago, after what we went through with Jerry Stackhouse, and I don't know, how in the world did we not get in the top 10 this week?
It's a good question, Tim. Thank you for the call.
It's not a team full of highly recruited, like four or five-star decorated guys. It's just a really good collection of players. Like, for example, Tyler Tanner, he was a great player at Brentwood Academy. Great player. But he wasn't a nationally renowned guy. I was reading, you know, he committed to Jerry Stackhouse and just was saying, you know what, I want to go to Vanderbilt. Like, he didn't buckle when they changed coaches, and he won the job. And he's probably the best story on the team, the way he has made a jump. By the way, Tyler Nickel is at 49% from three on the year. 49%. That is lights out, especially when you're talking about three-point shooting as they move the line back and shooting a lot of threes. But I think that's why there's probably a little hesitation with the ranking. Is to say, are they really that good? Like, who's their, you know, Tyler Tanner's not a household name across the country.
That's why I think the game on Wednesday is huge for Vanderbilt.
Yes.
Yeah.
If they can win that game, I think that will get a lot of people's attention around the country. As Tim said, Vanderbilt stayed at number 11 in the AP top 25. The
Sounds
women,
like the football team, don't
it? Yeah, a little bit. The women, moved up to seventh. The women are in the top 10 for the first time since March of 2007. The win against LSU on Sunday was its first against a top five team in 17 years. And Shea Ralph, she used the G word. She used the G word to describe Michaela Blake's generational, but you know what?
I'll allow it.
She could be right. So congratulations to the men and women over on the over in West End, the basketball
cherry on
program.
Top, yeah. Adam. That's, I don't know if you saw this, or I don't know if you mentioned this, but it's the only program in the country that has undefeated men and women's teams. It's the last program left in major college basketball.
Who would have ever thought
undefeated men, undefeated women?
Who would have ever thought that Vandy would be that college, that program that can
say we have
two undefeated teams still?
It's a strange mix. On the men's side of the remaining unbeaten teams in the country, Arizona, Michigan, Iowa State, Vanderbilt, and Nebraska.
Yeah, Nebraska.
Yes,
Nebraska.
Yes, 14-0, the Cornhuskers.
With the mayor, Fred Hoiberg, who was a great player at
Hey, they got some players
Iowa
State. on that Nebraska team. They got some players. This ain't just going to be once they get into the Big Ten, they're going to be players in this year's season.
One texter says
something like, who's the best player ever to play at Nebraska basketball, right? Like, they've never had a great team that I can imagine. Like, I can't name one great player from Nebraska.
Sam Sabetti.
Tyrone Lue played at Nebraska.
Deron Lue, yes. In fact, Vanderbilt, I did a game of his when I was doing Vanderbilt games with George Plaster back mid to late 90s. There was a tournament in Hawaii. I think Vanderbilt played Deron Lue in Nebraska in that tournament. And I was thinking the same thing.
Gosh,
like,
you're right about
maybe
that.
Maybe Deron Lue's the answer.
It might be Deron Lue.
Yeah.
One texter says, Bears fan here, Matt Nagy would be a disaster. Had one good year carried by defense he inherited. Offense was predictable, and it was clear immediately he had nothing to do with Chiefs' success. And also horrible idea in today's NFL to not have your head coach as play caller. Otherwise, if they succeed, they will be hired away. That from Rob.
I mean, I understand the sort of premise behind that. But listen, sometimes you just got to find the best coach and then allow your coach to find the best offensive coordinator. And if he loses, that means if you lose him, that means your team's doing something really well. You just better be able to develop the guys underneath him. That's the sign of a great coach, is that you develop those guys because you know they're going to be leaving. You know it. But can you develop the guys underneath them that this offense can keep going? So, I mean, if they want to hire somebody that can call the plays, great. If they don't, I'm not going to, you know, be upset or anything about it.
Hold on. I'm looking up the feels like temperature in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. It's a -5 Fahrenheit.
Oh, wow.
So, Willie, bundle up this evening.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to go more than a block or two outside.
Willie, who hasn't been in Nashville in like 2 weeks.
Yes. It's been a while.
Be like 60 degrees.
Oh, it was beautiful today. It was sunny.
Tomorrow's going to be the same.
Mild.
Man. It was so awesome.
It was such a beautiful day here in Nashville.
Man, I saw people running down the streets in shorts.
Yeah, I went
t-shirts.
To the gym today without a sweatshirt.
Exactly, Willie.
What a great day.
It's so wonderful.
You know what amazes me about Edmonton, though, in the Canadian cities? Even if it gets like this, like they're just like, yeah, that's how we roll. And they're walking down the street. They're crossing the sidewalks. And
are you walking down the street with them, Willie?
No.
Absolutely.
No.
It's also one of those cities that has a lot of the indoor walkways and tunnels and stuff.
Sidewalks.
So, yes. You can walk a lot of places without going outside. The Predators continue and conclude their road trip tomorrow in Edmonton against the Oilers. Willie, correct me if I'm wrong, 4-2? On the road trip so far, including the game in Minnesota before Christmas?
If you count the game, yes, which you know was a separate trip. But since they've played a home game, they've won 4 out of 6, including winning at Minnesota, at Vegas, at Utah, which was big, and then, of course, you know, a big head-to-head with Calgary the other night. So they've only lost two. They lost to St. Louis, where they had to travel the day of the game, which is not easy. And they lost to Seattle on the back end of a back-to-back where they got delayed coming out of Vegas. And not to make excuses, but there was a little bit of a blip in there that made it a little difficult. So overall, they feel good about their game. What's the ceiling on that? That's the question. I know there's a lot of people that are, shall we say, Adam, conflicted with the success that they are having.
Yes.
But if you had said halfway through the season, about a month ago, hey, they're going to be 1 point or 2 point, whatever they are right now.
1 point out of the playoff spot.
Tonight. 1 point out, and some of these teams play tonight, so tomorrow when they take the ice, it might be more than one. But just to get back into that spot is remarkable, and they deserve a lot of credit for climbing out of the hole. So let's give them that, and then we'll just see where it goes from here.
That'll do it for us today. Speaking of the Predators, Barry Trotz will join us tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Trevor Maddich will join us in the 4 o'clock hour. Mike Borgonzi addressing reporters tomorrow. Not sure of the time. I imagine it will be in the mid to late morning. But we will have full reaction to what Mike Borgonzi has to say following the end of the Titans season tomorrow. We will talk to you at 3 o'clock tomorrow. The Commodore Hour is coming up next.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team love you. You hear that song. Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. See you tomorrow at 3 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Peace.